April 11th, 2007. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 100 first. And Myron and Ms. I guess Gonzalez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While they're coming to the table, I just wanted to point out that you have a draft staff measure summary at your place, which just gives you some information about what the measure does and a little bit of background. This is a technical fix for resulting from moving the state fair into parks. And I'll let Mr. Myron and Ms. Gonzalez talk to you about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Myron, the legislative coordinator of State Parks. With me today is Shirlene Gonzalez, our budget director. She's here to answer any technical questions that you may have on this bill. We've distributed a copy of our written statement in support of the bill. You've also got the measure summary, which this is a pretty simple bill. It just tries to improve the accounting procedures that we have for the state fair and streamline the process. So we're hoping to get at least one bill out of this session, and this is our hope right here. So we hope you don't disappoint us.
We still have some hopes for one more bill.
We're still working on some other ones, Senator. But I won't bother running through our written testimony. You obviously can read that, but we'd sure be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
I did notice that the drafting of this bill, they didn't give me a relating to state fairs relating clause.
So, Mr. Chair, if I didn't vote for the original transfer of the state fair to parks, do I have to vote for this bill?
Yeah, probably.
But not today.
But not today. Ms. Gonzalez, did you have anything to offer?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think that the testimony speaks to what we were trying to accomplish. We really discovered this when we were working through the merger of the fair into Oregon State Parks. Our intent was to do what the bill describes, and it was really in working through Treasury that we recognized that the constraint that we needed to overcome. So this is...
Any questions? Hearing none. Thank you very much,
thank
both
you
for coming this morning. And I think we'll get this one plus one more. Okay, I'll close this public hearing. And Mr. Brown?
Sooner we have four today at 10, right?
Yeah, or we'll be done long
okay
before that.
Okay.
And I will open a public hearing on 5024. And I believe we're on the final section of your presentation.
Yes.
And
sure,
you had some handouts this morning, too.
We did, Chair Devlin. Good morning, members of the committee. I'm sure you all are happy to know this is our last morning of presentation. So Clark Seeley's going to start out and go over the administrative request part of our budget, and then I'd like to take just a little bit of your time to kind of wrap up, and that should be it. So,
okay. Chair Devil, members of the committee, I'm Clark Seeley, the Associate Chief Forester of the Department of Forestry. Thank you for the opportunity to be with you again this morning and to share with you some information about the administrative agency administration program for the department. We'll be working out of tab 6 this morning in the presentation notebook. And just a little bit of information about the agency administration program. It's a fairly standard program, similar to others in state government. It includes our business services functions, our human resource and information technology functions. Also includes quality assurance, our agency affairs or public affairs function, and then finally also includes what we call resource planning, which is kind of our internal policy and think tank group within the agency. The program was established by legislative action in the late 1980s, bringing together all of these functions into one budget program for the agency. Working off of and referring to page 6-1 and 6-2, we've identified five key budget drivers for the agency administration program. Two of those really are driven by policy subjects, and those include our ability to provide meaningful, timely, and accurate public information, and also our ability to conduct resource planning efforts, as I've just mentioned. Three of the items, then, three of the five key budget drivers are related to our capacity to accomplish the work. The first of those, we've actually referenced a couple of different times during our presentation over the last week, and that is our aging, inefficient business systems, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a few minutes. In addition, as with most organizations today, both public and private, there is an increasing complexity to our work in both administration and business services. Some of that is from within, meaning our work that relates to state government functions overall. Some of that is external, that really affects all employers, federal law, federal regulations, audit standards, and those kinds of things. And then the final fifth key budget driver for us today is addressing facilities and infrastructure and capital investment needs. The department, as a fairly mature agency in state government, we're just a few years away from celebrating our 100th anniversary. We've built a lot of our infrastructure from a facility standpoint kind of mid-span, about 50 and 60 years ago now. We own and manage about 390 buildings or structures, ranging all the way from offices to lookout towers. Again, many of those were built in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. Many of those actually built during the Works Progress Administration and the CCC period. Those buildings have served us well over the years, but they certainly are, in many cases, nearing the end of their useful life. And even though we've maintained those over the years, in some cases we're at a point where maintenance no longer fits the need, and we actually are looking to do some capital investment and replacement in some cases. So those are really our five major budget drivers for the program at this point. Moving on to page,
Chair.
Yes.
Can we ask a question?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning, Representative.
Under your capacity driven number three, there's the last line of the first bullet is a little disconcerting, and it says you go on to describe how poor the system is, but it says failure of the system would severely compromise the agency's ability to accurately account for these funds. That's a scary statement.
Chair Devlin, Representative Girard, it is, and in fact, this is this is the system that we use to account for, manage, and distribute all of the timber sale revenues that come to the agency through our management estate for us. That represents today about $180 million of gross revenue per biennium is run through that system. Ultimately, the distribution of those dollars goes to all of the counties that have land that we manage, Board of Forestry lands, as well as the Common School Fund. It is a system that was originally built on mainframe computers in the 1960s, and again, even though it has been modified and tweaked over the years, the fundamental system is now at this point ready to be replaced. We have one remaining employee who has mainframe programming expertise. And in fact, he retired officially about 2 years ago and has been on temporary appointment off and on since then. Our only alternative really at this point is to replace the system. We've looked at the system a number of times with both the Department of Administrative Services and with the Secretary of State's office. Part of the concern about the system as it exists today from the security standpoint is that the system is not able to take advantage of modern techniques for secure access to the system. And again, even though we've implemented some workarounds for internal controls of security of the data. We've had ongoing conversations with the Secretary of State about that risk, and again are concerned about that.
Here's just a comment. Even though I am a fiscal conservative, this is really alarming that we've put this agency into this kind of a situation, and that the state may be looking at having to somewhere do a rescue operation. So I just want to be on record to say I am very, very concerned about the situation we've placed this agency in.
Please proceed.
Moving on to page 6-5, just to touch briefly on our performance measures for agency administration. Currently today we have two measures, both related to customer service, and these are the measures, again, that are in place today. One of those measures relates to customer service to our county government partners and customers. We survey county commissions and county commissioners across the state and gain their perspective and input on our service to them. And then the second group are forest landowners, and we survey the Protection Association Board of Directors across the state to gain insight from that group of customers. On page 6-5 and going on 6-6 and 6-7, you'll see the results of our survey for those two groups this past year. The county government survey is the one on 6-5, and the forest landowner survey is the one on 6-7. I think I would say that our marks at this point are good, and across the categories that we measure, we had a good response in both cases with a 75% response rate from the Forest Landowner Association and a 56% return rate from the county government on our survey. I think part of the reason that we see good marks generally from these two groups is that our district foresters around the state invest a lot of their time in working both with county government, county commissioners directly, as well as the forest landowners, and we try to keep good relations and connections with their needs and try to respond to their requests and needs as they come along. You'll see a little bit of a reference, particularly with the forest landowner survey on page 6-7, you'll see that we received a 78% meter exceed rating from the forest landowners in terms of availability of information, and that actually, we think, gets back to this question about our ability to provide timely information through our current systems, and our policy package that relates to improved business systems, we think, would help that measure. The expertise measure you see there at also 78%, I think, is fundamentally a reflection of our baby boomer generational change that we're in the midst of today. We're working very hard on our succession management planning effort to ensure that we don't lose expertise, but it's inevitable that as we have the kind of turnover that we have today, as most organizations do, that we are going to lose some knowledge out of the agency that's tough to replace, but we are working hard on that. Moving on then to talk about the measures for 07-09, beginning on page 6-9, really it's fairly straightforward. The first change is that we're actually going to combine the two customer service measures now into one, and that'll get us consistent with the rest of the state agencies. But we're going to continue to survey both of those stakeholder groups. So we're going to continue to be involved and survey county commissioners and forest landowners, but we're going to do it in one survey effort. And we'll probably end up surveying about half of each group each year and then rotate off and survey the other half the following year. The other change for 07-09 is the adoption and inclusion of a new performance measure for the, and it's the board governance measure that has been put into place for most agencies that have operating boards, and it's found on page 6-10. And again, the Board of Forestry will pick up and begin to use this measure, in fact, this year. They adopted the measure formally by board action last September. right on the heels of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee's approval. And the board was anxious to get going with this measure, and they'll be using it this year. 2007 will be their first year utilizing this measure. Okay, I'm ready to move on, actually, in the book to our policy packages, beginning on page 6-14. Agency administration, we have four policy packages proposed in the governor's recommended budget, and you can see them summarized at the top of that page. And I'll speak particularly to a couple of those. The top two packages, 102 and 103, are related, but they are different phases of our business work. Top 102 is essentially a maintenance and infrastructure improvement package for our current information technology systems, not future-looking, but just maintaining currently what we have in place and making some investments to keep us running in the near term. Policy package 103 is actually a broader and a farther-reaching initiative that looks at all of our business systems and gives us a chance to, for the first time really in many, many, many years, look comprehensively at the agency's business systems and then begin to work on improvements for those systems. State Forester Brown referenced this actually on our first day with you in his agency summary and opening remarks. This initiative helps us really make some significant strides in modernizing, improving our capacity, and improving our efficiency. If you turn to page 6-17, that begins the narrative of this particular package. We call it the Forestry Business Improvement Initiative. And I think one of the important elements of this package for us, in fact, it's really foundational to the concept that we're trying to implement here, is that this package is not all about computers and IT. It's really about improving our business systems fundamentally. And to do that, the place that we want to start is an analysis and a review and an improvement of the business processes themselves that then may lead to the application of improved technology and so forth. But as you know, the place to start is an analysis of the business process and from that see what the solutions would portray. So I think it's important, and our focus has been and will continue to be on first looking at our business processes, finding out where we need to make the improvements, and then applying the right solutions. The thing we don't want to do is obviously rush in with the solution in hand from an IT perspective and frankly apply technology to a bad process. That doesn't get us anywhere. We have identified over the last 4 years now through an initial assessment and scoping process kind of our top tier list of business processes and systems that we think are most in need of improvement. And those are listed on page 6-18 and 19. They do, in fact, include the system that we just talked about, the timber revenue accounting system, but also a number of important agency systems that relate to our work with private forest landowners and the tracking and accomplishment work that are related to forest practices, to the Forest Practices Program, and our Stewardship Forester Program. On page 6-19, we talk about business systems for the Fire Protection Program, literally being able to take a modernized and efficient business system out to the fire, and particularly in large fire efforts where we're hiring a number of contract resources and needing to be efficient with the payment of those resources. And then you can see that we've identified document and record management, financial management system integration. We currently have a number of siloed systems in our financial management work that need to be integrated both internally as well as with the state system. And then finally, an electronic decision support system that would allow both the Board of Forestry and the Department to be more efficient with our decisions and with the information that supports those decisions. I would say back on the records and document management system need, we currently, like many state agencies, suffer fairly significantly from document overload, both paper as well as some electronic. The world is driving us towards that to some extent. We need to be effective and efficient with that. We're currently not, again, it's an area of real concern. I think there's a number of state agencies in this similar position today, and in fact, through work with both the Secretary of State's Archive Office as well as Department of Administrative Services, I think there's some real potential to meet some common needs through the development and implementation of kind of a common system for records management. And there's a number of conversations going on right now across agencies to do just that, so that we don't end up with a forestry record system and an ODOT record system and a Department of Justice record system and so on and so forth, but ones that can work together. The other policy package that I'd like to reference briefly then is the last one of this section on page 6-23, and it is a capital construction package. Would provide capital construction funding for three particular office locations of the agency: John Day office, our John Day office, our office in Sisters, and then the historic State Forester's Office building here in Salem. The John Day and Sisters offices are again ones that were built in the late 1940s and early 50s. Sisters was built in 1948, John Day in 1950. Again, those buildings and facilities have served us well over the years, but they are deteriorating and in some cases have some fairly significant health and safety risks associated with them. Poor wiring that really is fundamentally worn out, and while those are important to address, these two buildings actually have also a more fundamental concern for us that is different than some other places around the state, and that is that both these offices now have evolved over time to be right in the middle of town. The John Day office is on the north end of town, and when it was built in 1950, it was out on the north end of town, kind of out of town. It's now right in the middle of residential development in John Day. And, of course, we have heavy equipment, dozers, large transport trucks, water tenders, fire engines, and being able to get out of that residential neighborhood and respond to fires by driving through the middle of John Day, the city of John Day, is difficult. Sisters presents the same problem. We're actually, our small office in Sisters is just right off, one block off of Highway 20 going through town. And again, we've evolved to the point where we've got our fire engines parked on city streets, and the neighborhood, of course, has grown around us. So this capital construction package would give us the ability to look at both of these sites and make some decisions about moving out of both of these locations to other property in both towns in a way that, of course, meets the future needs. We anticipate that in both cases we would be able to sell the property, of course, and the proceeds of that sale would go towards the projects, but we're not sure at this point whether the sale would cover the entire cost of new property acquisition as well as building buildings. The policy package gives us the ability to move forward with that, though, dependent upon that revenue in some part.
How much property do you actually have in downtown Sisters?
It's a very small lot. It's actually three legal lots contiguous, and I'm going to say probably a quarter acre. It's pretty much city lots with a small building and a small office building, three-room office building, and a small warehouse garage attached.
It's probably worth a lot, though, because they're building townhouses right across the street,
it's
basically.
It's worth an incredible amount of money, actually.
Yeah, it's high value. It's just, but it's not very big.
Yeah, I was just hoping for about 5 acres.
Yeah.
It's actually a very nice location, but not for our needs. The final project here is renovation of the state forester's office building here in Salem. And as you know, that building is a historic building. Built in 1938, placed on the National Register in 1984. We've done, of course, maintenance and upkeep of the building over time to keep that historic character. We work with the State Historic Preservation Office to do that. But the building actually is now at the point where we need to make some significant capital investment in infrastructure. The plumbing of the building is essentially original. Original iron pipe, and it is not only time to replace, but actually through the electrolysis process that I don't understand is springing leaks occasionally, just through literally worn out iron pipe over all these years. The electrical system in the building has been replaced in part in some places of the building over time, but not comprehensively. Probably the most significant need in the building is the heating and ventilation system. It is the original system built in 38. We've had a boiler replacement once, but frankly the system now is either in need of replacement as a boiler or moved to a different system. When we did rebuild the rest of the compound over the last 10 years that I'm sure you're familiar with, we actually required of the contractor for that project to design the HVAC system for the new buildings in a way that the capacity would be present to support the State Forester's Office building if we were able to move to that point. So all of the capacity of our new system is in place, and in fact all the conduit and all the plumbing is run to the State Forester's Office building. The interior work needs to be done through this package, but we actually would be then utilizing the new HVAC system of the campus. So that's the need in that case. And with that, Mr. Chair, I think that brings my comments to a close. Be glad to answer any questions.
Questions at this point? Seeing none, thank you very much. Mr. Brown, you wanted to have a few minutes to close?
I do, Chair, if that's okay. Throw up a slide, run through just a couple of things. What I'd like to do is to summarize some of what you've heard over the course of several hours of our presentation here and hit some of the key points one more time, just to kind of leave them with you. The handout's there, too, so you have some reference for that. Turn that on. Basically, these are the four main themes that you've heard in our presentations. We've got, over the course of about 6 years, some reductions in capacity because of budget cuts and because of lost purchasing power. We have, and Clark did a real good job of describing a little bit of that to you, we have deteriorated infrastructure that hasn't been dealt with for quite a few years. There's a couple of significant emerging issues that you heard, and I want to cover them for just a minute, and there's a few. My description would be budget outliers that have come up that I would like to hit one more time. So on the reductions, so look at that just for a minute. This was our highest priority policy option package, the restoration of fire initial attack capacity. And I'll just make 3 points. One, you heard from landowners yesterday. Landowners think this is very important. They're highly invested in this program. They fund a significant piece of it. They're willing to fund this increase because they think it's important. Essentially, a dollar of general fund gets you nearly $3 of other funds. That's how it's crafted. That works because the landowners basically match dollar for dollar general fund in this program. And then our contract protection is fully of other funded dollars that go with this amount. The other thing I would say about it is this is an investment that is meant to lower the risk of the general fund over the long term. And I want to say that one more time. Because of the way our whole funding structure in fire works, when you invest at this initial attack level, you're basically investing in lowering the risk of tapping into the general fund when we get into higher, more extreme fire situations. If you recall, we have this basic level of attack. We have a $15 million emergency fund that's funded out of harvest tax and landowner assessments. Then we get into $10 million of general fund before we get into the catastrophic insurance policy. So investing at the initial attack level is a way to lower the risk against that $10 million of general fund. Yes?
Clarify one thing on this, on the Restore Fire initial attack. This is 13 positions, but about 5-plus FTE. So these are seasonal positions, is that correct?
They're seasonal positions or adding back some additional seasonal positions or extending some of the seasonal positions that we currently have.
Oh. So general job classification for?
It's going to be a firefighter category, and I don't know what the rank is or anything, but they're almost all seasonal firefighters that are, you know, pretty much the entry level salaries for our agency. Is that fairly accurate? Okay. I'll use a little backup here if that's okay. The second priority policy option packet, and as I understand it, you know, right now this is not part of the recommendation that's moving through the legislature to fund this policy option package. That was a comment that was brought up again yesterday at the testimony. The same would be true for our second priority, which is restoring our stewardship forester capacity. This also has a general fund, other fund match that's statutory. It's 40% other fund, 60% general fund, I believe. So it's not quite the $1 per three in a fire program, but it certainly brings with it additional revenue when the general fund is invested. The three points I'd make about that. One is the split. The second is you heard several comments yesterday from landowners that one of the things that has made the department's private landowner program special, I guess, important, valuable to landowners, is we've always gone out there and approached this as an attempt to help people be successful. It's not been a program to go out there and bust people for doing things wrong. It's been to go out there and help people be successful at following the law, at meeting their needs, at accomplishing their objectives. To do that, you have to have people who are available to spend face-to-face time with landowners. There's no other way to do that. And over the course of the 6 years, we've had that capacity reduced by about 25%. That's why this is our number two priority. We want to maintain a program that focuses on being helpful to landowners and helping them realize their value, not kind of retrenching to the point where we just sit there and wait for people to break the law. The third item on this page really isn't a reduction in capacity, but it is attempt to spend our state forest timber revenue dollars more efficiently. Commissioner Labhart went through that yesterday during the testimony, that when you have limited duration positions, it's a constant turnover. There's a constant cost of refilling those, both in terms of administrative costs and lost productivity. We think we can accomplish about the same thing by converting 21, I believe, limited duration positions into 11 permanent positions. And it's just a more effective use of the funds we've got available in that program. I'll go on to the next slide. Two more items related to reductions in capacity. The traditional urban forestry program that we've carried out for many years now runs on about three FTEs, and it's been absolutely solely federally funded for a long, long period of time. So the reduction in capacity there is really about the federal funds going away, not completely, but getting substantially reduced over time, and probably even more And our request there has been to make up some of that loss of federal fund with general fund so that we don't have to go below 3 FTEs for the bare-bones urban forestry work that we try to accomplish. That's why that's up there as a fairly high policy option package. The second item is to reinstate some smoke management capacity. And, you know, this is an important program to landowners. It's also an important program to controlling fuels, excess fuels that are out there. And it's also an important program to communities, because what we do in the smoke management program is help landowners figure out the best times to do that work so that they're not impacting communities. And again, we've got to have people, we've got to have resources to be able to offer that service to the communities as much as to the landowners. This policy option package operates solely on other funds, which are burn fees. I would point out that we've got a bill moving through right now that would bring back the statutory ability to use a general fund harvest tax match to improve the capacity in this program as well. But that's not part of this right now because that bill has not been, obviously not been approved by the legislature yet. I said Clark did a really good job of talking about our infrastructure and the fact that it is deteriorating. And you just, you know, you can't let that happen forever without paying for it. That's sort of the overall message. I've included here our policy option package on effectiveness monitoring because, you know, you need to have capital capacity. You've got to have buildings to work in. You've got to have technology. But you also have to have information to do good work, to make good decisions. And so this policy option package that deals with effectiveness monitoring, to me, is about infrastructure to do good decision-making. You've run through, Clark ran through the business systems technology request there, the certificate of participation that we've requested, and also some base maintenance funding that we've requested in that whole area. I think, you know, we're approaching this need the right way. It's starting at the very high level. How do our business processes work, and what's the best way to make those work efficiently, and then crafting the systems and technology and administrative controls that are going to make that function. On the building piece, this is just the tip of the iceberg. We have buildings all over the state. That's the nature of our business. We have to have places where we can administer programs locally, where people can contact us. We've got radio relay stations on top of mountains. You know, we've got places we've got to put fire engines and all the other equipment that we use to do our jobs. And there's not very many of those have been replaced in recent history. And this is just literally the tip of the iceberg. Clark did a really good job of describing what's going on at John Day, that we're in the middle of a suburb right now, of a subdivision. Same thing's true of Forest Grove. You know, we're working through kind of the organization of that whole operation up in that part of the state. But Forest Grove is a huge complex with lots of heavy equipment and fire engines. It sits right in the middle of residential part of town now. It used to not, but it does now. So we're just barely getting started on a long list of infrastructure needs. We talked about two significant emerging issues, and we have two policy option packages to address those. One is the bioenergy. It's gotten lots of press. I don't need to go into that part of it a whole lot. What I will say is that this policy option package is for us a way to also start to get some folks more connected to the federal lands issue, because that's really where the forest, the wood fiber part of the bioenergy equation intersects with what's going on out on the ground is on federal lands. And that's what I look at this as, an opportunity to really give us a couple of additional people to start impacting what's happening on federal lands. There's a couple of other places that we're working on the federal land issue. We kind of view those, if they evolve and we can get our foot in the door, as things that would be self-supporting. One of those would be where we operate as a general contractor for Forest Service's stewardship program. You know, if we can kind of, again, get our foot in the door and get some projects going where we are, in fact, the general contractor for a stewardship program, we think that would be a self-supporting activity, and we could come back at that point and identify where the source of the other funds and the needs we have to do that. So it would not be, you know, it would be a revenue neutral way of going about this. And the same would be for fire protection. We have initiated discussions. We protect about 2.2 million acres of BLM land right now under contract. They pay the full boat rate for that protection, whereas private landowners pay half for their protection of their lands, and the general fund pays the other half. BLM and state forests pay the full rate. And we've just barely started discussions with the Forest Service about, is there some places where we could all be more efficient by doing that on U.S. Forest Service land as well. And again, that would be a revenue-neutral function, but another way for us to start to have a stronger hand in what's going on federal land. The other significant issue was the community forestry policy option package that we proposed on working in the interface. And again, we talked about that quite a bit. Talked about the pressures that exist on forest lands as people want to move out and develop those lands. And we don't have a program that deals with that right now. I think we could effectively interject ourselves into that whole scenario that's happening right now and create a better result, create a result where as that land does change from actively working for us to something a little different, that we are still there promoting environmental values. We're still there promoting maybe some economic wood fiber values and some other things. Right now, we don't have the program or the capacity to do that. And instead, we're spending substantial amounts of our stewardship time dealing with not-in-my-backyard issues that result from there. Significant amounts of time. And so in addition to giving us a kind of a proactive ability to get in front of this issue a little better, it also is going to allow us to reallocate time back out into the urban or into the rural portions of our responsibility with those stewardship foresters that are now getting drug in to the urban fringes. And then one last slide. We talked about a few other issues that don't necessarily show up as policy option packages, and I wanted to run through those just one more time. Sudden oak death was one, and you all were very attentive there and appreciated your concerns about that. As I said before, when we were working through the governor's recommended budget on this, we weren't sure how much federal money was going to be available. To this point, they have funded that function pretty heavily. We know now that they're not going to, and there's about $500,000 shortfall that we feel like that exists right now in order to deal effectively with sudden oak death. That's not a policy option package. It's in the governor's recommended budget. there's been some discussion about the special purpose e-board appropriation, $6.7 million. Two things that I want to highlight there. One is that and frankly, there's been some folks come to me and with the impression that this is a new commitment to the general fund. And I want to emphasize to you all that it's not a new commitment to the general fund. It's been there for the last two biennia before this, not at this level. Last biennia, it was $5 million. But it was a special purpose appropriation that was a commitment out of the general fund last biennium for $5 million. It's not a new kind of add-on. The second point I want to make is that it has purposely not been put into our budget in the past, and we would not recommend that it be put into our budget this time, but that it be kept on the e-board, because by doing so, it makes us able to claim FEMA reimbursement for some of the costs that are in there. Finally, we talked about the Hinkle Creek Watershed Research Paired Watershed Projects, talked about their importance to being able to administer and develop effective riparian management rules. Again, when we were going through the governor's development of the governor's recommended budget on this, we had access to essentially a federal earmark and also to secure rural schools Title III money that were providing substantial amounts of funding for this. And both of those we know now are not in the works. So again, it's not a policy option package, but it was something that was mentioned several times. And with that, I'll quit. And you all don't have to listen to me anymore.
Any questions? Well, it's been an interesting couple of weeks. Yes, I represent the plan.
Thank you. Just on that last piece about the SPA, what beyond the insurance premium and severity resources, which I thought only added up to $5.4 million, because that number was more than that, is there something additionally that typically was in the SPA that now is in the budget? Or was it reduced and then moved over into the budget bulk at the same time? Because the numbers I had from some testimony yesterday added up to $5.4 million. Like 1.2 in insurance premium, 4.4 in severity resources, 4.6. And I thought you said, excuse me, 5.6. I thought you said
6.7. 6.7, Chair and Representative Plum. 6.7 is our request. And I'll have to get some backup on exactly what all is in that. I know the insurance premium is, I think, we're figuring $1.3 million. Is that right? And then there's airplane contracts, the heavy air tanker contracts. There's some added helicopter. Yeah, 1.3 on the insurance. Fixed wing heavy air tankers are $2.2 million. And a lead plane to go with that is another $100,000. There's administrative costs related to that for about $60,000. And I think that one of the increases here is probably the contract helicopters. Last biennia, we relied on call-when-needed helicopter contracts. And what's happened as the heavy air tanker fleet in the nation has dried up is that it's become more and more difficult to make sure that those helicopters are available. They're getting pulled all over the country. And so we feel like we need to go ahead and invest up front in having those available rather than on a call when need basis.
All of us are saying.
Yes.
And on the point that when it's in the e-board SPA, we can leverage federal resources, that amount was something like $10 million last season or biennium.
Chair Devlin.
Chunks, I think, 3.5 and 6.5 somewhere.
Chair Devlin and Representative Plum, I don't think it was that much. I think the highest reimbursement that we've made from FEMA is $2 million. Is that right?
Paul Bell with the Department of Forestry, Fire Protection Division Chief. The FEMA reimbursement for severity resources is we're eligible for pre-placement cost reimbursement for those resources. I think some of the FEMA numbers you've heard have been for that, plus other items that we're able to get. But specifically out of the SPA, the FEMA reimbursement only occurs for the pre-placement of those resources, and that's 21 days prior to the use, and the event has to be declared a FEMA event. So, and it's in your notebooks, but we do have the history of the FEMA reimbursements in there.
Yeah. There's actual costs above those pre-placement costs, and the actual costs occur when we in fact have a big fire and we're accumulating big costs, and those are actual, and those can be FEMA reimbursed. But for out of the SPA specifically, what gives us an advantage is being able to, once we get to a FEMA fire, we can backtrack 21 days and pay for the availability of that airplane for 21 days.
Any additional questions? Well, hearing none, I believe we will be back in 2 to 3 weeks. And 2 to 3 weeks, that would put us just before the forecast, so that might be a good time.
just hope it's positive.
Let's hope.
Before the forecast might be the good time. After the forecast might not. So, if we have any additional questions, we'll get them to you, and I'm sure that Ms. Jordan will be working with you, and we'll hopefully be back in work session in 2 to 3 weeks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you very much. And with that, I'll close the public hearing, and we are adjourned until tomorrow morning, and we have the Department of Ag.